Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 514 of Waypoint Radio. I am your host, Patrick Klubik, because Rob thought he could tempt fate, just get a vaccine shot in the middle of the week, and he would just be built different. He's not. He's the opposite. When I saw, he sent a message like he was like skipping off to go get candy at the market.
Yeah.
Off to go get my vaccine and flu shot.
I'll go get my booster.
Wednesday at noon? Like, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow, brother? And then awake to a message that is,
brother,
I can't move.
Brother.
All right, well.
Brother may have some oats.
Yeah.
He's dead. Both.
He's
both
not dead.
At once.
He feels dead.
Yeah, both at once.
I did it too, but I also had zero response to any of the shots, and so I was, but I also made it for a Friday in case things, I finally met my vaccine maker. I mean, I guess they do say in theory that it's better to wait on the flu shot for like later in the season so that like you have like your highest immunity. I guess assuming that it's both highest immunity and also that they've, when they do the dartboard of guessing what the flu is going to be, because if for some reason you haven't really gotten a flu shot, they don't really know which flu strain is going to take off in a season. They just go, hopefully it's these, and then they give you a shot that will hopefully protect you against that. And I think it does like do like a base level, like you'll recover faster from whatever strain you end up getting, but it's also possible that they just guess wrong and just the one that goes around is not the one that you've gotten in theory protected against. But as you have just heard, I am also joined not just by the vaccine ghost of Rob Zachney, but our producer, Ricardo Contreras.
Hello.
Another producer, Renata Price.
Hello. I'll be honest, without the dulcet tones of a Zachney, I've come in unsettled. I've come in off my footing, but I feel like we're bringing it back.
You normally, Patrick, you usually do a countdown. You enjoy doing a countdown, and this time there was nothing. You just hopped right in.
It's true. I do normally like a countdown. It sort of like sets my mind to like flip a switch of I'm going from person I was before to personality Patrick. For folks who have not done a podcast or done it for a long time, those are different people. You go into a different mode when you have a microphone on. And so that is like just like a quiet way that I will usually do that for myself to just be like, okay, like putting on guest or host hat. But I didn't. I just, you know what? There's no time for this. I've, you know, got a kid with hand, foot, and mouth. If you, anyone out there in the Waypoint Radio audience that
hand,
has
foot,
a child.
Hand, mouth?
Hand, foot, and it's just what it's called. The hand, foot, and mouth is basically.
Damn, they're a
at
baby.
Its best.
And they have hand, feet, and mouth?
Yeah. Well, you're hoping for that. You know, that's as a baseline. You're hoping you when they come out that
it's
all right, hand,
model.
Feet, and mouth. And yeah, hand, feet, and mouth is it's a viral infection that in its best case scenario is just a mild grade fever with a couple of bumps. In its worst case scenario, your children can lose their fingernails and toenails, and it can spread to adults who can. When adults get it, it's hard to get, but they can get it. And when they do get it, you pretty much get the worst case scenario, which is that you're how I imagine what it would be like to walk into Kato's apartment and ingest thousands of invisible wasps.
Thousands.
That's what your throat turns into when you have hand, foot, and mouth,
oh, no.
Except in bump form. And then also you will lose your fingernails and your toenails.
So yeah, you get the wasp eggs. You go into Kata's house and breathe in all the wasp eggs, and then they emerge in your.
That's how you get
esophagus.
Hand, foot, and mouth. Actually, that's
from wasp eggs specifically.
From wasp eggs, I've knocked on IKEA wood, or I don't think this might have been Walmart. I'm not sure. Knock on cheap, whatever this material is made out of. Have not gotten it before, and. My youngest, who is the one who has it, we think he got it from a neighbor. It's just a fever, but the fever will just... If you've ever had a fever that lingers, where you can feel fine for half a day, and then all of a sudden, oh, damn, I feel like shit again, because that fever just comes back. We're just waiting for that to break, and it has not. A thing that has broken, though, and I wanted to bring this up because I don't know if you ended up actually writing a story on it quite yet, Ren, but I imagine you have at least borne witness to it.
Yes, I'm
Overwatch 2 broken. Also, Overwatch 2, I'm hearing, hates the poor, which is a weird stance for Blizzard to take, but, you know, it's 2022, you know, people are out here wilding, and so, I guess Blizzard could be doing any number of things that would surprise me. What is happening in Overwatch 2?
So Blizzard does hate the poor, and also not just the poor, the fiscally responsible, the bitches who trust their Wi-Fi. Blizzard is going after a lot of people at once. So the current state of Overwatch 2 is that the game released to a pretty massive server load of genuine players, which caused a
lot of server issues. Can I clarify one thing that I saw this morning that is not that big of a deal, but it's very funny? That there is not a separate Overwatch 2 client. You just download a patch that turns Overwatch into Overwatch 2.
Yeah, Overwatch 1 is dead.
That's really funny. At the end of the day, like logistically, probably makes more sense. But there's something very emblematic and humorous to me Overwatch 2 being a patch for Overwatch 1.
It broke Rich Presence on Discord. It still looks like Overwatch because it's the same EXE.
It's also the fucked up part of it, Patrick, is that you cannot play the video game that Overwatch 1 was anymore. So if you purchased the original Overwatch 1, that game no longer exists for you to play, which makes it doubly weird for the people who purchased the game and happen to use a prepaid phone plan. Right. So if you bought Overwatch 1 and use a prepaid phone plan, you can no longer play the video game Overwatch because Blizzard has added an SMS authenticator that does not work with some, emphasis on some, prepaid phones. I've been trying to journalism my way into figuring out which plans work and which ones don't and why.
I just say at least this morning they have removed that requirement for this is like a really kind of a wishy-washy phrase, but something along the lines of the vast majority of existing Overwatch 1 players, essentially, if you've already jumped through the hoop of playing Overwatch 1, have an account, they're not going to ask you to have the SMS requirement, but that doesn't necessarily seem to resolve what are they going to do going forward. It's not necessarily as though they are dropping this SMS requirement. It's just, hey, these existing players who aren't, potentially like complete nightmare players that we want to ban from playing the game. Cause I have to like, is that what this is about? Like ultimately about controlling who is playing a free to play game and making SMS a logistical hoop, sort of like you can't use a Gmail account to register this. It's gotta be something personal because you could just register a million Gmail or Yahoo or Hotmail was the one back in the day that I remember was ripe for abuse.
The idea is that it's trying to make smurfing inconvenient.
Smurfing?
Smurfing. That is when you have a higher leveled player or a higher skilled player who is in like the higher matchmaking tiers making a new account so they are matched with.
So they could just roast.
This is super common for streamers. Like this is what streamers do is that.
Because they want the stream to be more entertaining.
Exactly.
And so it's more entertaining to beat up on shitty players than it is to get your ass kicked on a stream.
Exactly. People don't want to watch someone sweat. People don't want to watch someone sweat out a fight, especially if like it's a personality driven streamer.
Yeah, and they want the no scope.
Right. They want the no scope, but also they want the person to be talking while they no scope.
Yes.
And that requires a certain level of disengagement.
Where does the smurf term come from? What is the. Why?
Huh.
Smurf.
I mean, I know what a smurf. I've watched that when I was growing up.
Isn't it? Wait, Kata, I'm just going to say this phrase to you and see if it activates your brain. Smurf, buff, scrub, nerf.
No. Smurfing existed before that phrase, I'm pretty sure.
I know it does, but I think it's very funny. It's Patrick, very funny. The IKEA gamer catalog, the IKEA gamer setup has a live, laugh, love style sign in it that says, Smurf, buff, scrub, nerf. Next to the gaming PC, which I've been thinking about for many a year. This aside, I believe smurfing comes from, like, I think it's just like trying to make yourself into a little guy, trying to convince everyone you're just a little guy.
That makes the Smurfs are tiny creatures in a big world. So that tracks. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, this is a huge problem for a ton of competitive games. It's really frustrating to play against a Smurf. Or it can be. I mean, as someone who plays a lot of Valorant, playing against a Smurf in Valorant is kind of a fucking nightmare because you are trying to
sniff it out immediately. Is it obvious? Okay.
If someone's dropping like 30 plus consistently, they are a Smurf. Like I have our friend of the site, Colin Joyce, will drop 30 plus consistently in a game, but that's just because he's just built different. And also he does have a couple of Smurf accounts so he can play.
Oh shit. This is known.
This
is such a problem to the degree that they find themselves punishing, as has been, you know, essentially like the reason people have prepaid cellular plans is for there are lots of reasons to have it, but one of the very like base level ones would be, data plans are expensive. Maybe you are not on like lucky enough to be on a family plan or can afford like a month to month phone plan. And like, this is just one of the ways that I have access to a phone when I absolutely need it, but it is otherwise not part of my monthly financial calculation. I think a lot of people take that for, oh, did you figure out smurfing?
I figured out where it came from and it's so much better than I thought.
Hit us.
Okay. Hit me.
Back in the 90s, when Warcraft 2, not World of Warcraft, Warcraft 2 was at the height of its popularity, there were two specific players that people would regularly quit out of games because they were too good. Their usernames, their usernames became well known, and so they decided to hide themselves by changing those usernames to Papa Smurf and Smurfette. So, like, all incredible. They did was change their usernames, right? They didn't make a new account, but they changed them. And so now Smurf accounts became known as that just because of these two Warcraft, apparently, according to makeyousubs.com.
That makes sense. I love that the metaphor works, but also there's a much more plausible story, which is that it was actually a community born meme.
Imagine being amazing. Such a menace in any video game that people begin to create a term around you.
The version of this that I would encounter when I was younger in arcades was you would have instances when you'd go walk to the Street Fighter machine or the Mortal Kombat machine, and part of the way that you would reserve your spot in line, or like say you want to be up next, is like, you know, you put your quarters, right? Like you put your quarters up on the machine and like that sort of like puts you in the queue. And there'd be times where you would notice, oh, this is not a queue for people to be swapping in and out of the lineup. You're just lining up for the slaughter. There is just one player who is exceptionally good. And so if you notice that, one would just walk away. Like, why would I don't want to play against this person? And sometimes some of the arcades, depending on the one you went to, but if it became common enough with a single person, like they would actually just ask the people to get off the machine because it was materially much like Blizzard saying, please put in a phone number so that they'll stop doing this. Like they weren't hiding, but they were dominating to such a degree that it was people weren't having a good time, which is then impacting the material of the business infrastructure in a way that they had to quietly ask them, we'll give you some quarters, could you please go play something else so other people can hop on the machine. That track, there is a, you know, not one-to-one, but like there is a lineage there where we arrive at Overwatch punishing people who don't make enough money.
I was going to say,
want to play Overwatch.
Oddly enough, at your arcade, the thing that you didn't notice was afterwards they slapped the child and called them a dirty poor and said that they're not allowed to use any of the machines anymore.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so this SMS authenticator has been a huge problem. And then the other thing that has been plaguing Overwatch 2 has been DDoS attacks, because people are mad about Overwatch 2 to the point where they've been DDoSing the servers. And that has gone down twice on account of the DDoS attacks, in addition to the pretty serious server load of all of the new players jumping in. I have seen 8,000 player queues.
I saw 30,000. Yeah. I saw a screenshot of I think this was the opening day when you saw a lot of anxiety from, like critics, reviewers, people who are assigned to the Overwatch beat, in which they make their money by covering games like Overwatch. You know, like a lot of players, especially if they're doing guide work, get assigned a game and you need to get in and play this game. And it is not as though you can just go to offline mode with Overwatch and just do something else while you wait for the servers to figure it out. And that's where I was seeing screenshots of like upwards of 30,000, which it's actually kind of amazing. The game is programmed to even display that number. Oh, like, God. Instead of just capping it, like, servers are overloaded, like, please come back. But like the game is willing to say, no, there is a world where you would want to wait in a queue of 30,000
right,
players
this is the
and
MMO
hope you
thing.
Get in.
This is the MMO thing of like, you convince that person, like, listen, there's only 165 people in front of you. 165
right, 165 is reasonable.
It's,
oh, that's
time.
Like 5-10 minutes. I'll go get a water or right. watch a TV show and wait. But 30,000, like, what, how do you even estimate time for,
exactly.
for something at a scale like that?
It ended up only taking like 30 minutes. But I think that those numbers are being borked because of the DDoS attacks.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Part of the reason it's getting so high is that there weren't that many people waiting. There were that many people mm-hmm. fake waiting.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because, yeah, I was kind of surprised.
Wait, did you actually play the game?
No.
I mean, that's an... no?
I mean, I saw the number at 20...
You waited in the queue? Or you knew people that waited 30 minutes?
No. I waited in the queue for like 30 minutes because I was doing something else anyways. But then I got in, and then... I mean, I own.
At that point, you would have to play
one.
Overwatch 2.
Yeah, you know? At that point, I would have to actually play a game. I
play Overwatch 2, and no one wants to do that.
I fucking logged in and went to go look at, see what skins like I had. I like forgotten. I haven't played in a very long time, but I noticed that I don't have like any of the heroes unlocked, which is bizarre because I owned Overwatch 1. I'm pretty sure I paid for it. It was a long time ago. I played 30 hours of that game. And most of the roster, honestly, was just like unpickable, including most of my mains were unpickable to me. And I don't know if that was a glitch because I heard apparently like other people that had owned Overwatch like logged in and they had everything unlocked already, which is what they said would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why I didn't have that, and then I ended up not playing. I was just being like, okay, well, never mind then.
That feels like launch, like,
yeah, I hope so. I'm curious. It's happened to a couple other people I know that had Overwatch 1 and just didn't have access. So
there's one last thing on the Overwatch players are mad beat.
Yeah, please.
The game's economy for unlocking new skins is astounding.
Well, there's an economy for unlocking skins and heroes, right? Are those on separate tracks, or like, let's say you're a new player,
yes. Yeah.
Right? Do you want to like kind of broadly explain all of that and then explain why the skins one is fucked?
So the true new player experience has you doing a bunch of challenges, and as you do all of these challenges, you will unlock the entirety of the game's original main cast.
This challenge is like, do this move 6 times. Or, like, what exactly does that mean?
They're the weekly challenges, right?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
There's hero challenges, which are specific to that hero.
Yes.
And it's just play a certain amount of games. Once you
hit
five games, you unlock... Genji's one of the base ones, I think. You unlock D.Va. Once you play, like, I think... Here's the thing, though, is that it's, like, basically you get a new character every 10 games... until you hit 150. So at 150, you have unlocked 150 games. You have unlocked everyone from the original roster.
Then the new heroes are on the battle pass. are currently on like on a battle pass track is the plan. That's how they're going to be released. Is it
similar where like there's a free battle pass and then a premium battle pass?
Free and premium, yes. And the premium battle pass costs 1,000 points. You can get, based on just playing the video game, I believe you can get 90 points a week.
Cool.
So
pretty much you should pay.
Yeah.
You have to pay. This also skins cost upwards of 1,900 points. And so if you want to grind out a skin, we are talking multiple months of play in order to get a single specific skin that is a legendary skin, or you have to drop $20. It is a pretty egregious...
This seems like it's one of those see how far you can push the economy from the start when people are excited, and then we're I'm trying to delete and then you massage that, but it's kind of, I mean, it certainly speaks to the broader screw up that is Overwatch as a property, like from top to bottom, that they would not have a better handle on. They shouldn't be in a position, like, I think there's a lot of sympathy granted to that has been, I think, eroded over time with like 343 and Halo, in which, hey, never run Halo as a live service game. Going to have bumps. Going to have to figure it out as you go along. See what the community wants, what the dynamics are. Doesn't seem like they've ever really figured that out. But Blizzard doesn't have the same sort of leash. Like, you've been running a live service game. Yes, that it wasn't free to play, but... there's enough data out there that you should know that Overwatch 2 is not a new game. You know, it's dropping into a very mature market with a lot of competitors that have it's seemingly things that you could just copy and people would be happy with it or happier.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is all in addition to the gameplay changes, which a lot of people are pissed about. Like, it is, we're talking about L's on every level. We're talking about technical L's. We're talking about structural L's. We're talking about content L's. It is astounding how thoroughly this launch has like taken the wind out of the sails of what was supposed to be like Overwatch's big second chance. Because like to put this into context for folks, Blizzard stopped supporting Overwatch 1 and stopped like creating a lot of content for it so they could focus their resources on Overwatch 2. And then to release Overwatch 2 after dropping support for Overwatch 1 and having it be, for the majority of people, for many people, a demonstrably worse experience is an astounding unforced error.
How long until Overwatch Classic? Where I can just launch into old Overwatch and just play it. I feel like that's not off the table at some point, the way they did with World of Warcraft.
That's your Overwatch update.
All right, well, Overwatch is fucked. We knew that before. We know it now. So, and I think it's probably telling that neither of you have played it. Elsewhere, CD Projekt Red, also a company that has had many bumps in the road, specifically with the launch of Cyberpunk 2077, which it's wild to think that we are coming up on 2 years of that in December. But you know, they've kind of been plugging along, you know, kind of updating that game, not necessarily in line with the vision they presented at things like the incredible E3 demos I saw over the years, but certainly closer to I don't know, like not quite somewhere in the middle, but closer along on the spectrum. And they, CD Projekt Red is a publicly traded company, which means they have to do like shareholders reports and things like that. They're both a developer and a publisher. And they did something kind of remarkable this past week, which you can either look as from one direction of radical transparency that the video game industry would be better suited in posturing towards, and a world in which be more honest about what's going on and what you're thinking instead of pretending everything's a secret and sort of leaving players in the dark. Or you could look at it as we really need to pump up shareholder confidence. And so what better way to do that than say we're going to make 5 Witcher games in the next decade. You want a Witcher game? You get more than one. You can have 5. And so they announced that they are working on a number of things. For one, a brand new IP, which would be, it's interesting. It's the first new IP they've done. Like, they didn't own Cyberpunk. They didn't own The Witcher. And so this, like, weirdly is the first time that CD Projekt Red is doing their own thing. There's no release date attached to that. That is probably, you know, 7-8 years off. That is probably really, really, really long down the road. They announced a proper sequel to Cyberpunk, which I think some people thought maybe wasn't going to be the case once Cyberpunk was revealed to not have multiple big expansions. It was just going to have one. And the thought was, well, they're just going to move all the resources on to The Witcher, and that'll be the end of Cyberpunk as a franchise. But they are doing a proper sequel called Orion that is going to be not developed in their like base studio, but as part of a new studio in Boston, I believe is where like most of that development is supposed to occur. They announced a new Witcher game that has a codename Sirius that is part of a trilogy. The first game is going to come out in like the next 3 years, and then they will release back to back. The plan is a sequel 3 years after that, and then a sequel 3 years after that. So like roughly a 10-year plan for Witcher. There is a third party. There is an external Witcher game also being developed. And then there is the other game from the Blood in the... what is that game? From the developer that they acquired.
Wait, was it the DLC?
Flood in... Oh, we did this before. Fire and then Rob remembered what the name was. Huh?
Are you trying to name a studio or a specific expansion?
A game. It's a game. They acquired a studio that is... Okay.
Flame in the Flood?
Flame in the Flood. They acquired that studio, and they are working built on something different as well. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot. It's a pretty, again, like I said, pretty audacious to announce all of that at once. It's a very Kevin Feige of Marvel standing on a stage and being like, here are the movies we are making for the next 4 to 5 years. It seems like kind of a playbook out of that. But it's odd. I don't know what to make of it other than there's a lot of potential disappointment in this.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, not enough people are saying this. You can just say anything. You can walk up to a microphone and put a PowerPoint on and you can put any words and letters you want together. And like, someone's got to listen to you. And in this case, shareholders, this information went into their ears. And a lot of this information went into all of our eyes. And we can't stop them. But do we have to believe them? No, 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 no. But they did say it, so... You know,
it's true. They did say it. And I do like that. Like, I am in favor of a world in which companies are like, yeah, this is kind of what we're playing, like thinking about, you know, here we go. And Ubisoft did that with Assassin's Creed recently, where they announced a bunch of games. And one of them was like just art, the same sort of thing, just artwork. It's like, I don't know. It's going to be in Japan, I guess. Don't worry about it. We'll show you later. It's like, okay.
I guess that for me, like the business side transparency doesn't feel like transparency to me, and I'm just interested in the dev side transparency, honestly, and being like, oh cool, what does this project look like? And so like shit like this almost makes me worried that we're going to get even less from the actual in development processes, because like this is all to assuage the fears of shareholders, and like showing shareholders in progress games, from what I understand, is a huge risk because they do not understand what video games look like and are like, that looks really bad. And so I get concerned, because also like the other thing about the Kevin Feige example is that we don't get like set photos from Marvel films, really. Like, you'll get a handful of people like in a room, but like
there's leaks, like there's, you know, there's like stuff that gets passed around, fans, like folks who, you know, live near a set or something like that. But yeah, in terms of a like formal, like you don't really see anything until they're ready to show a trailer, and at most you'll get like the level of secrecy is if there's a fan event, it's like, oh, you get to see the trailer, but the visual effects aren't done, and then it'll be on YouTube in, you know, 3 months or whatever. And that's not really, I don't know if I'd call that transparency.
Exactly.
That's just marketing. And I think that's what this is. Like, this is marketing in which it's trying to assuage fans who are a little, you know, worried about the direction of the studio. They're also there. One of their co-founders, whose name escapes me, is stepping down. You could look at that as a potentially encouraging sign. If you know, you, the development of Cyberpunk was bad and exploitative and in favor of getting a dollar before the health of the employees who were grinding on that game, regardless of how you feel about how it came out or where, where it's settled now. You know, I don't know that this sort of transparency translates to, and also we're going to treat the workers really well. You know, they've done a lot of public facing stuff, like putting out videos saying like, you know, we understand, like we're changing our work culture. But it's like one thing to change a culture or to say you're going to change a culture, and it's another to do it. And then you, it's hard not to be worried about a company that says, you know, last time we bit off more than we could chew and we kind of grinded our employees into dust to try and deliver that. We're acknowledging that was bad. Also, we're working on 7 or 8 games right now, which is a lot more than the studio was doing before, in which we kind of just worked on one at a time.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, like those on the, granted, there's like studio expansions. I'm sure they're going to go on a hiring spree. Cyberpunk made a shitload of money. But those don't necessarily go hand in hand with, we would like to be more ambitious than ever before. And also treat our workers with respect. I don't, you know, listen, we'll have to see.
Last time we did bite off more than we can chew. This time we have correctly portioned a 15 course meal. And we will be, doing that now.
Before like, we ate we a turkey doing? Leg, now we're eating the whole turkey. We've expanded our stomachs and our throats and we're just gonna shove it down.
Witcher,
so we'll see.
Go ahead, Kata. Witcher 3 took 3.5 years to make, and they're gonna do 2 sequels back to back, 3 years apart.
That seems, you know. I mean, I think this has gotten a little muddled in how they presented it, in which it's like the first game could take anywhere from 3 to 4 years from right now,
right?
And then the idea is it's 3 years after that, and then 3 years after. So it's. It's been presented by some people as like, oh, they're making 3 games in 6 years. It's like, no, they're making 2 games in 6 years. Now, a lot of this is they're doing a big transition to UE5. And the thought is they are among a number of studios that are just giving up on doing their own tech because it's a pain in the ass and just hoping that Unreal Engine will streamline some of that process. That seems like a big bet when you haven't built a game using those new processes yet. So, you know, it's like just really easy to look at this as a bunch of promises for games that might not ever ship. And I don't know if that helps them or hurts them. I mean, it helps them now because it's a shiny object, but I don't know that it necessarily translates into a bunch of games that we'll be playing in. I don't know if we'll be playing any of these in 5 years.
Cyberpunk took 9 years of development.
Yes.
Is that
including the 2 years that essentially it's taken to get to today?
No, yeah. It hasn't. That would be, no, that would be 11. We're at 11.
Cool. Because cool. I would essentially include the last 2 years as active. Like, there are patches to respond to player feedback. And then there is, we shipped a fundamentally broken game that was taken down by storefronts and forced companies like Sony that don't like to give refunds and want to tell you, fuck you, to your wallet. To actually give people their money back. Like, that's when you fucked
that's
up.
That's when you know.
Also, all those updates are still putting content in. That's the other thing. It's like, those are bug fixes, but also they're like...
features.
We are putting in 44 additional side quests. And you're like, wow, that's a big number.
There's a lot of side quests.
Hey, wait, whoa, where were those guys?
There's a different treating Cyberpunk as a live service game. That's not exactly the pitch that people thought they were buying into. And yet, I'm probably gonna start playing that game pretty soon.
Yeah, I thought about it. The resurgence is interesting. I mean, I watched the last 2 episodes of that anime with my roommate, and I was like, "This is well made. I can see how it is tricked."
Just the last two.
Yeah, I listen. I'll watch 2 episodes of a show. It was on the TV.
What the fuck?
You can't stop me.
Jesus.
I was like, this show's well made. Trigger's great at this. Trigger's great. It's a great Trigger anime. They are completely on their bullshit, and in a way that I was like, oh yeah, cool. This is making a good pitch for what Cyberpunk is. Great. And then I looked at the video again and was like, that's $60. And I can't get that one expensed. No. No, I won't. I have 45 Steam demos to play. No.
Well, that is a good transition point. This week, Kato and I hopped on the Lightning Express, revisited a really fun demo. That's too slow. That is not the Lightning Express. They would not make that noise.
Wait, that choo-choo was too slow. So you're looking for like a choo-choo, choo-choo.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, yes. That is the Lightning Express that Kato and I... Well, I don't know. I guess just me. Kato got on the wrong tracks. Kato was like, went the other way. But we, over the summer, did a series of streams where we played Xbox demos and Steam demos as part of various sort of like these demo kind of marketing campaigns, which developers put on some like increasingly polished, but sometimes just, I don't know, here's what it looks like. Put it on your wish list. Campaigns that happen. It's really cool. I highly encourage people to check it out. When we talk about transparency, it's not CD Projekt Red putting up a PowerPoint that says, I don't know, here's some games we might make. Like, this shit is where you see developers like actually being transparent about like where they are in the development processes and trying to both get feedback and interest in what they're working on. And so we did a stream where we played a bunch of games, but Ren, you also said you played a bunch of games. Is there one? We'll do a lightning round here. What's one that you played that you really liked?
One that I played that I really liked?
Well, we'll do round robin. You do one, and then I'll do one. Kato can do one, and I'll do one.
I really, really liked the Deadeye Deepfake Simulacrum demo. That was one of the four top-down shooters that I played, but Deadeye Deepfake Simulacrum is one of the best cyberpunk games I've ever engaged with. It is extremely sick.
Can you drop
a
Steam link in the chat so we can see it while you're...
Yes. Deadeye Deepfake Simulacrum is a top-down cyberpunk game that is... One, it's coming out next week, which I'm very excited about. Two, it is a really simple art style, but the combat and like mechanics are really engaging. It's one of those games that actually wants you to hack shit. And by that, I mean, you have to pull up a terminal and type things like type command prompts into a terminal.
Yes.
And it wants you to do that. Whoa. It wants you to do that while in the middle of fights with,
fuck off
with enemies. And also all of these like different cybernetic powers. It is extremely, extremely cool. Really hard. It feels
how much of this, so to paint a picture for people, I mean, the UI is, it really does look like you're looking at like, I don't know, a computer matrix of like different, there's different data sets. You have a command terminal. You also have like a map screen, and then you have like a network graph, which is clearly like must be looking at like the network of cameras that you're hacking into. How much of this is signal and noise? Like, how much of this is aesthetic, and how much of this is stuff I'm paying attention to, is meaningful to everything I'm doing at any given moment?
I would say that your abilities, the things in the top left, things like slug snacks, instant rewind in the world, slug snacks.
Is that like Smurf?
Slug snacks. Slug
does
snacks.
Does a Smurf
scrub
eat a
nerf.
Slug snack?
So slug is the ability to slow down time in this setting.
All right.
So if you have, say, for example, I'm looking at this screenshot right now, 18.06 slug. That is basically 18 seconds worth of time dilation that you can do.
All right.
So you can go into bullet time for 18 seconds. Things like your abilities, yes. The weapon that you have, yes. But you don't need those stats. Like, you're not like in a fight having to worry, oh, is the speed on this going to be 46.85, right? Unless you run out of ammo and you pick up a new weapon and you're like, okay, cool. What the fuck is this weapon I just picked up? Because all of the weapons are procedurally generated. So you're like picking up a weapon and being like, what is this? What does it shoot? How does it shoot it? And if you look over on the side of the screen, you can be like, okay, let me scan all this information really quickly. Okay, that's how fast it shoots. That's its damage. That's its recoil. Okay, I can work with this. Let's go. So you can do that. And then finally, your like actual character stats are the current speed which you are moving at.
wait, like the momentum?
Yes. Your velocity.
Is it like velocity or momentum? Like this, I guess it's all like sort of like switching in real time. Like
it's velocity. It's your velocity. Okay. Which is useful because some of the game's shell. So sorry, they're called skeletons. Skeletons are your body, so you're also buying new bodies with money to be like, okay, I like the stats on this cybernetic body a little bit more. And you are like installing yourself into that instead. And so it's this like really engaging. I would say that the best comparison I can give is it's like Heat Signature crossed with Cyberpunk. Heat Signature, for those who are unfamiliar with it, was a ship stealing game released a few years back, which also has a lot of like time slowdown stuff that is absolutely phenomenal. I really love Heat Signature. It's great. I recommend it wholeheartedly. And this feels like that, but with a bunch of cyberpunk and also like some pretty engaging narrative hooks. Your AI handler certainly has a personality. And is kind of unsettling. And if you watch the trailer for the game, there are moments where instead of the like computer-esque sprites that you see on screen, there are things like giant writhing masses of eyes. And you're like, okay, cool. This game is going to go interesting places with what it is doing, with its like narrative and like aesthetic in a way that I find really exciting. And I want to see where it goes. I'm really.
I enjoy this tagline: "Confront the future and die trying." Good for you. all right, that's Deadeye Deepfake Simulacrum. Okay.
Yes.
Kato. What did you play of that? Either on stream or if there's one you tried elsewhere that you really liked.
Shit! What did I play on stream? Well, we played Dredge, which was interesting. A fishing game where you've crashed your ship on the way into a new job, and I feel like you died. I think this is a whole like purgatory situation or some shit. But basically, the mayor of the town that you like crash into.
Good to know that when you die, you just end up in debt again.
Yeah.
So the afterlife is not a more equitable, fair place. It's just a spiritual transfer of debt.
You immediately get it put into a Tom Nook situation of like, here, have this boat, but also you have to pay off this boat. So go fish and sell your fish at market. But it also has like panic meter, which I didn't get to go off because we like ran out of time, but.
We were desperately trying to get the panic meter to go off. The eye was losing it.
It was.
But then the sun came up and as we all do, the sun comes up and our sanity meter goes down.
Yeah, that's how that works. But there's definitely something kind of off about everyone you talk to in a way where like I'm interested in going back into that one to see what's happening in that space. And the like mini game of actually fishing is pretty simple but fun. And then you end up doing a sort of like Tetrising of all the fish, which if you've ever enjoyed flipping around items in the cache, the briefcase for Resident Evil games, this is the game for you. Which I am that person. I spent way too much time making sure everything fit, not just in a good way, but in an aesthetically pleasing way. And so, yeah, that's kind of the gist of what we got in the 15 minutes I was playing. And I am interested in going back and finishing that demo, though, so we'll see what else there is. If I can make myself panic and whether or not there's
horrors. Yeah, I'm curious. Well, there was the trailer implied tentacle monsters in the ocean.
Excellent.
So I'm curious to see what exactly that is. A game I really liked, Rhythm Sprout, which is a as you might gather, is a music rhythm game, but it's a music rhythm game in which it's the music genre is chill beats to fight RPG enemies too. So the music is way more akin to something you'd get if you were listening to, you know, lo-fi hip hop or like any other sort of like variants of that you will find on, well, I guess largely on YouTube, but sometimes on music services, you know, where you can just listen to kind of chill, largely repetitive music that kind of just exists in the background as kind of a form of like very pleasant white noise. And Rhythm Sprout adopts that for a music rhythm game where you have a note chart and, you know, it's equivalent, it's colored and that's mapped to different buttons on your keyboard or on a gamepad. But I found like music is really difficult to nail in games like this. And a lot of it then comes down to like the licensing tracks or original tracks. It's just really challenging to do. And I found this to be a really novel approach in terms of the music selection. I thought it was awesome. I'm not saying that doing lo-fi style music is easy by any means, but it changes the approach for, I'm sure, the composers and the designers. And I don't know, it really worked here. The beats are good. I was bopping to them. And they were really fun to do the note charts with. And it actually made for the levels didn't feel all that long. They felt like roughly how like a 3 to 5 minute song would be in a typical music game. But they could be longer and they wouldn't feel repetitive in the same way because either the lack of lyrics or just the nature of this sort of music just lends itself to, I don't know, a different vibe. I think it's very good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm curious to play it on harder difficulty levels. Part of the issue I sometimes have with music rhythm games is on the easier difficulties, it sort of abstracts the song relative to sort of the beats that it might be going along to. I prefer my music games to have their note charts like pretty literal with the beats. That's kind of like how I internalize it and then map it from my brain to my fingers. And I think they do a pretty good job on the normal mode, but there is like a hard mode and it just wasn't unlocked in the demo. And there's a good chance that the hard version might be the one that I ultimately prefer because it'll be a little closer to what you're hearing through your ears and then kind of map to your fingers. But that is Rhythm Sprout. And I think it's extremely good. And I guess here it says it's coming out early 2023. Continuing the line of a good sort of tags for a video game. Can you stop King Sugar Daddy? I don't know. I'll try next year. Ren.
Hello.
Let's do another round.
So another game that I played and I'm at least interested in was After Dream, which was a short horror game, like a short horror demo. The pitch on the Steam storefront is get lost in a lucid dream, bending the lines between reality and fiction. And basically it is a side-scrolling adventure horror game in which you're using a camera to bring objects into reality. So you like walk around, you do adventure game stuff, and then you go into this camera mode where you can fatal frame-esque look at things and take photos of them. And when you take those photos, they like come into the real world. And I think the game has a really gripping art style. It begins in a like Silent Hill-esque hotel where like everything is that specific style of gross. Mm-hmm. And
is everyone just pretending that it's everything's fine?
Yes.
No, it's we don't live in a decaying nightmare.
Yes. So the demo has you do a favor. Not a favor for someone. Basically, you go to this guy's like, hey, can you get us some food? And your character's like, can I get you some what? And he's like, yeah, can you get us some food? We'll eat anything. And you're like, you'll do what? And he's like, no, we will eat anything. And then basically you go through and fill this jar with just some troubling materials. I would say, and then you give them to them and they're like, all right, cool. Munch, munch, munch. Thanks. Eating a jar full of like cockroaches and like rot. And it is unsettling. And I think relatively well done. I am interested to play this game when it comes out. I think it handles, I think it manages to pull off its tone well, which I think is difficult for horror games, which are like embracing the Silent Hill-esque aesthetic. It's very easy for them to fall into corniness, and I think that this is doing an okay job.
Very cool. All right, that's After Dream. Steam says it's coming out March 15th next year. Kato, what else? Can I nominate one for you?
Sure. I mean, I think I was probably going to go there anyways.
Okay. Well, friends versus friends?
Friends versus friends, yeah. That's what I was going to...
Yes. Yes. Please proceed. Please proceed, Kato.
So, Friends versus Friends is a multiplayer shooter, which also has, surprise, it has cards. Therefore, I decided to look into it. Had a really, really, really cool looking trailer pop up. When was that?
I think that was during the E3 gauntlet. Yeah. Like, it was during one of the many trailer segments we were watching back in June. But it had a very striking trailer, and also then cards appeared, and we went,
well, what?
Okay.
Yes. It had a very, very brightly colored animated trailer that it was kind of hard to parse exactly what the kind of game it was going to be, unfortunately. But then there was like a small gameplay section like right near the end. And it's like, oh, it's a first person shooter, but also you have cards. And essentially what it boils down to is you can build a deck and... these cards are essentially abilities that you get, and you get a hand of a specific amount of cards every like round. And the way that the 1v1 version that we played at least plays out is that it's first to three. And there's different, you know, there's different kinds of cards. There's cards that debuff your enemy. So like one of them is you can make your enemy really, really slow. They got,
and it can be used from a distance, right? It doesn't require you like tagging them or like even being in sight. Like you can, and one of the really good ones is it messes with the size of their head.
Yeah.
So it's like if you want to make headshots easier, it just enlarges.
You just get,
is it like head. Their brain There's leaks two. Out of their head?
Yeah. There's two of them.
Okay.
One of them is a brain explosion, which I made your brain just pop out the top, which let me deal extra easy and super easy. Oh,
so it's like a crit on top of a crit.
Yes, exactly. And then there's another that's just like big head mode, like in whatever other video game has a big head mode, right? But it matters because headshots do more damage. And so each turn you use these cards, and the next round you only get like a draw of three, and you can hold up to five. So like there's a little bit of a game there in holding, like deciding what to hold back for later rounds since it's first to three, and like when it's the right time to use your big. There's a nuke, which I thought
I would say there's a literal big one. If that is in your transit.
Yeah.
There's one that turns you into a giant.
Yeah.
There was a great moment where Kato turned themselves into a giant version of themselves. And then you can execute a bullet time.
Yes.
Sort of like a time dilation slowdown, a mechanic, and it applies to both players, obviously, but the other player doesn't know it's about to happen. And so Kato
totally threw
made
me
themselves
off.
Big. And then I threw down.
Why am I so slow? I'm so big and slow.
And so like, if you don't have your reticle in the right spot, it's like, there's no chance you're going to be able to move it. In order to get a shot off. And so it worked out well for me because he was big, which meant his head was exposed. So he's enormous. And then I lay down the time dilation card, and then I'm able to just pop a bunch of shots to his head. And then Kaiju Kato hit the bricks.
Yeah,
did not last long.
Very funny dog wearing a... Somebody said it was a Shadowrun shirt. The art style for this game is... It's pretty cool. I really enjoy it.
It's cartoonish with, I don't know, it's like pixelated stylings. I'm struggling with the words to explain exactly like how you would.
Yeah, it's like more. It's almost like a
3D 16-bit sort of like thing going on. Like these dithered textures, like a lot, you know, where you can't like quite read all of the text on it. It's like Borderlands adjacent, but like in a way that's like really complimentary to like, you know, like they're going off on their own style.
Yeah.
Like, but you can see some commonality there. It's really striking to look at.
Yeah. And it seems really neat. I'm curious to how there's apparently also a 2v2 version in the, in the full game. So I'm curious how that plays out. And
you should explain how the nukes work.
Oh yeah. The nuke, which I thought, surely this is going to kill the enemy. It's just like a win button. But what it actually does is it destroys the map that you're playing on. It just makes it a giant like crater. But then what we learned is that if you do two nukes, you destroy the entire planet you're on. And now you're in space, which is very funny. There's lots of like moments of just like good humor that this game and its aesthetics are leaning into.
Kata, you and I went to space, and neither of us hit the jump.
Neither of us hit the jump button because we were too busy.
Oh, the physics are different. Yeah, that would make sense. I've seen videos of people in the moon area. There's like a whole, like you can like jump off and there are cars and stuff.
Oh my God.
The layout is completely
We were like facing each other in an open space and both decided to just gun each other down.
The worst. All right, I'll do one more before we hit a break. We'll revisit some of these. This is going on all week, and so there are more games I want to talk about, but we'll save some of those for Monday. The last one I want to shout out is going to be Storyteller. This was also like a real highlight of our stream. Storyteller is a game that I guess has been in development for the better part of a decade. People were talking about playing demos of it at PAX 2012.
Oh my God.
You know, not uncommon for a game to, if it's, I don't know the nature of this one, whether it's like had a trouble development or it's just been a tiny side project for a developer for a long time. But like the version we played off of Steam, it feels really polished. It's coming, being published by Annapurna. So I got to imagine this is actually on a track to coming out. Storyteller is a game in which you open a book, you are given a prompt such as, was it like Edgar killed by, was it Bruno? What was the, do you remember? Baron. And so like, okay, well, how do I accomplish that? Well, there are these story panels and in these story panels, you have different characters and settings underneath those panels. And as you drag one of those onto a panel, it creates that setting or drops a character into that setting. And so what you're trying to do is use these different objects and settings to create consequences for future settings. And so you will, like, let's say you will set down in the first, there's three panels. In the first panel, you're going to put down a proposal. Like that's what the setting is called. And that is two people falling in love, getting to, so you put the proposal setting down, you put down, let's say, a character named Edgar, and then, you know, the girl named Amelia, and you put her down, and then they're in love and they're married. And then in the next panel, you can have another proposal, and it is Amelia on one side and Baron on the other. And Amelia explains, not to, you know, in graphical form, Baron's heart is broken because he's realizing that Amelia is already married to Edgar. And so you've set up in these two panels heartbreak. And then in the third panel, you can, there's like a gravestone, and then you can drag a character onto the gravestone so that Edgar is dead. And then you put Baron over the, you know, looking over the grave. And then, you know, like that is implied that he has killed him. It's like a little more to it than that, but like that is like the kinds of things you were dealing with. There's like an Adam and Eve section. There's ones where get more complicated where you have like six panels and you're dealing with like Dracula. And there are the solutions are not always straightforward, or there is sort of a straightforward solution based on the prompt. And then you can arrive at solutions both faster than the game intends you to. So if there are six panels, you don't have to use them all. Can, but you don't have to. Or you can get solutions that are, there are solutions that like fill the prompt, and then solutions that fill the story beat that it's pulling from. And you'll get achievements for like fulfilling the story that it's pulling from by enacting it in the panels. And we didn't get to this, but then there are, I think that like gesture challenges, which are much more difficult prompts for the player to pull off that are using the same tools, the same panels, the same objects and characters. And then can you pull this off? And I think, I forget exactly one of the prompts that people gave, but it was like, you know, like Baron kills Edgar twice or something like that. And you have to like find a way to manipulate that scenario into existence. Like in the Adam and Eve one, there is one where it's, you know, not just like being tempted by an apple, yada, yada. There's one where you kill Eve by having Adam give her like four apples and she gets a horrible tummy ache. So like these are the scenarios that are playing out in the game. It's really, like, the artwork is utterly charming. It allows for, like, these darkly humorous scenarios to, like, just, they look wonderful. It just seems like this game is going to be fucking awesome when it comes out. Like, it's a demo like this, you're just like, cool, I'm good. I don't want to, just let me know when the game's out. Don't need to know any more about what's going on here. And seeing how complicated the prompts got, even in like the normal sort of arc of the challenge was a delight to see. So that is Storyteller. Doesn't seem to have a release date yet, but that demo was extremely polished. And so that seems like something we'll be playing, if not this year, then something sooner rather than later. So we are going to take a quick break. We'll come back. Got more to chat about. Be right back.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Kato, you have been checking out a game that I'm very curious about. We were all very taken by the trailer for it when... Now I don't know when they did the trailer for this. It was during something.
It was during a thing.
That's so
specific. Which one of those things?
It wasn't that long ago.
No, though. It wasn't.
Oh, it was Gamescom. It was Keeley's Gamescom.
Right. Opening night
event. Moonbreaker. A game being published by Krafton, the PUBG company, who is actually going to have a couple games this year because they'll also be publishing the Callisto Protocol, game for the ex-Dead Space developers. But what is Moonbreaker? All I know about it is like I'm playing with minis.
Minis.
But a video game minis? So what's the sitch?
Let me tell you. What if you could have little guys and you put them on a table on some... And you put down some little, like, fake trees.
You've already sold Ren. Little guys on a table?
I love a little guy on a table. It's true.
Ren's done. Like, sold.
And then you can, you push them towards each other and they fight. You have a set of rules that make them fight. Now, what if all of that, but in a video game?
Okay.
Moonbreaker is very... It's very fun. I think like a super easy way to describe it would be like Magic Arena for a game that doesn't exist in real life. And Magic Arena is Magic the Gathering, the card game, but digitized into a form that technically those cards do exist in the world, but like it's, you know, you can play it digitally online with other people.
This is what we played on stream, right? Where Rob and I almost brought down the empire of Natalie and Kato, correct? Okay, you didn't have to laugh that hard about it.
Sorry.
But that is what we played, right?
Yes, that was what we played on stream. It was Magic Arena. And this is essentially that, but for a miniatures game that doesn't exist in real life. But it treats it as fully a miniatures game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so...
Wait, is there, like, a whole lore and, like, world building? Or is it just presumed, like, these are just cool little... enemies.
There's lore in the way that there's lore for like the Warhammer 40K miniatures game. Like there's like stories about the miniatures and stuff, but the game itself is not like, this is why I describe it like Magic Arena. It is not a, like, there's no single player campaign to this. It is a jump on and then like play versus the AI or play versus other players and like just have a match. And it's very match structured. And it's also, like Magic, structured around a limited pool of figurines that you can expand by getting booster packs. like, instead of unlocking through progression like you normally do in other, like in XCOM, right? Like, you get more people to use for your team that you, like, level up through them getting XP and all that. This game is very much, this is just, like, you play games, you get a currency, or you can, of course, buy this currency. You get booster packs to open up. You get a random assortment of new miniatures. Duplicates get broken down into a third currency that you can also use to, like, craft a miniature. But it very much plays exactly in the space of, like, this would be a blind box, like, miniatures game in the real world. The game itself plays, I mean, it's a pretty fun, very, like, extremely positionally, like, important, like, positionality is very important in any tactics games, but the way that this one plays is, the ranges are all, there's no grid, right? The ranges are all kind of analog in a way. It's as if you were measuring with, like, a measuring tape out for all of these, like, different abilities and stuff.
I'm pasting a screenshot, and you can, like, sort of see how, like, it's almost like a heat map, but, like, kind of, like, weight, like, ebbs around,
yes,
like, the circle of the,
yes,
of the miniatures that you're setting down. And so it's not strictly, yeah, like you're saying, like, there's a move,
no,
three,
yeah,
spaces.
There's no grid. It's like, you're,
it's like, if you can fit in here, because, like, and it fits in the physical space, it will let you.
And, like, physics comes into it a couple times in strange and interesting ways, where, like, there's this one character that has, like, a little grapple hook, and they can pull enemies towards them. Now, there's, like, there have been times when I can see a character and get the grapple hook on them, but then there's a piece of terrain that is just, like, in the way enough that as they're being pulled, they, like, whack into it, and then it'll stop there. And, like, the first time I did it, it was like, oh shit, I didn't even realize, like, I thought if I could select them for this ability, they would just pull them all the way to me.
Right, it'll just take them through, because that object doesn't actually exist. We're just pulling them through.
Or it would go around or whatever. Like, but I didn't notice this, but it did actually tell me, like, on subsequent turns, I realized it will show you if, like, in that movement, it's gonna, like, be interrupted by terrain that's out on the battlefield. So it's extremely positionally, like important, but also, like, obscure, because it's there aren't grids, so you can't be like, oh, I know that person can only move X amount of grid or whatever. It's all, like, kind of in the way that you play a lot of these tabletop miniature games that don't play on a grid. It's all, like, distance space, so you kind of eyeball, like, it looks like it's about 5 inches. And then, like, when you actually go to do the ability, you're supposed to measure exactly to make sure. Mm-hmm. But before then, you're just kind of, like, trying your best to make sure that all your pieces are lined up correctly. And similarly to things like Hearthstone, for example, it has this sort of, like, energy system where you get, like, one energy to play abilities is basically what you use this on. You use this energy to play each of your miniatures as a special ability that uses it, and also to play new miniatures onto the board. So you start with, like, one, your captain, which has a lot of HP, and the point is, the win condition is kill your enemy captain. So to start, that's just the two captains on the board, and then each turn you get one more energy, so by turn three you have 3 energy available, and you can drop a second piece, and so on and so forth. So there's these mechanics of, like, do I spend my energy on doing an ability this turn, or do I need another piece on the board? Is that more important right now? And there are moments where, like, even though my enemy has dropped another piece on the board, I've been able to line up a really good combo of abilities where, like, I just eliminate that piece almost immediately. So it's, like, worth considering that always. The tactics themselves are pretty fun and interesting, but, like, I I kind of chafe against the sort of, this is now a, like, I got indoctrinated into magic very, very young, too young. And
I, like, is there someone specifically you want to curse for that? Who's responsible for it?
I don't remember. Somebody in my elementary school had magic cards.
Wow. Well, that's convenient that you don't remember.
I don't remember their
name. That's how curses work.
Yeah. If I could only remember the name, I could break the curse. But like...
The problem is, I think if you broke the curse... Okay, here's... If you could break the magic curse...
Yeah.
No longer care about magic.
Yeah. I'm right there.
But it also... Magic is probably responsible for you liking...
A lot of other things.
Card stuff.
Shit.
You lose magic, it kind of is. But you also lose, not entirely, right? It's not like, of course you could learn to like card, but it just becomes one of many things you like as opposed to like a top tier. Like you lose that deep passion
for
card-based. You're willing to just, okay.
Well, all right. Here's the issue with the way this game is set up and the way that magic is set up is that you create an inherently uneven playing field when you have random boost, like when randomly seeded boosters are like the way that you build up the pool of characters you can play with. This is a big issue in Magic. A lot of like top decks end up having individual cards that will go for like $30 or $40 on the secondary market because everybody wants to build the best deck possible. But there is a literally physically scarce amount of those cards. Like there are less of those cards in the world than the rest
of the
commons.
It's a competitive thing, right? Like if you like look at like a roguelike where like, hey, we are using randomness to diversify the experience. That's one thing when it's you against a computer. Or the elements the only person who matters with the against this RNG is you.
Yeah.
It's that, much different when you introduce another player who can be at a disadvantage because of either it's out of their control or they didn't want to go.
Yeah.
They didn't want to go outside of the ecosystem and spend money to acquire it to balance things
or
out.
Stay in the ecosystem and put in a bunch of like, you know, pulls of the slot machine until you get the one thing that you have that you need or want for this deck. This is why now I only play Netrunner. One of the few card games out there that releases their sets, you just buy the whole set all at once. Like you get every card that's in there. So everyone's
and they probably
building.
Make less money that way.
Yeah.
Because this is ultimately not for balance reasons. It's a financial decision.
Yeah. It is to extract the most amount of money out of their players, right?
I guess I find it interesting and disheartening, frankly, that when recreating when I saw this trailer, despite having no real interest in Magic or affinity for like card based games, it's like, oh wow, this is like a really interesting idea to take a lot of this feel and nostalgia for a certain type of game in miniatures. I mean, we should also point out, when they introduced this, they spent the vast majority of the time showing someone using the miniature editor which you can go in and color and tweak and do the sort of stuff that people are doing with, you know, their actual miniatures if they're taking the time to actually paint them and customize them. And they're like, look, we just built an incredible tool to do this virtually. And I was like, that's sick as shit. Because that is acknowledging
very fun.
What can we do digitally that plays off of interest in the real world and enhances them or does something different? Like that. Okay, cool. That makes sense. But then they looked at the financial model and went, now we like that one. That's
like
cool.
Magic.
That's good.
Because the way that games like Warhammer 40K, they make money by selling sets, but like it's not randomized, right? It's like if you want X, like whatever, you have to go to the store and buy that specific character mini, and then you paint it or whatever. But this is playing in the magic space of like it's randomized. So like if you were chasing for a specific thing, you don't even know.
But it's not as though, like, hey, these elite level cards are only part of this pack, and this pack's more expensive. So if you want these elite level cards, you're gonna have to pay for this tier. Right. No, it's randomized. You know, like it's not
all mixed together.
There's Right.
And so, like, it kind of took the winds out of my sails for this game. Like, I really did. I did That's enjoy what I played of it. But it's just, like, this is now, like, they're setting it up to basically just be...
Another one of those.
Another one of
but
those.
It's just computerized.
But, like, yeah, with minis instead of cards. It's another Hearthstone. It's another, like, where... The kind of like,
and it's early access, and they are flipping on all of this monetization right out of the gate. It is not as though, hey,
also
sometimes
it has
it'll happen with games like this.
A lot of these games are free to play. Magic the Gathering, Magic Arena is free to play. Hearthstone is free to play, and then like the
or,
reason, part of the reason
the reason you charge for a base level $30 is like, look, we're not flipping on any of the monetization stuff. This game is going to go free to play or change months, but like. Hey, pay $30. This gets you in. It gives us a financial foundation to work with. Shows like player interest, but the actual mechanics inside, you're not going to pay for anything because the money's going to change. The mechanics of how, like, so much is going to change in an early access game that this feels particularly shitty and exploitative of a model to engage in at this stage of development.
It does. To be fair, it is like. It feels extremely polished, and it feels like kind of odd that they would even like this is like maybe like it feels more like a soft launch than like actually being an early access game where it's like the thing that they are figuring out is the community's limits on how much they want to engage with those microtransactions. And actually I think literally yesterday they posted an update. So this game, when did this drop again?
Just last week. I mean, it was or in the last 2 weeks. It's very recent.
September 29th. October 5th, they changed a bunch of the monetization stuff already.
Cool. Definitely what you should do once people have already paid.
Right. They like changed things about the UI in the store where like certain currencies were showing up where they didn't need to. So, like, already those changes are being made. And it feels like that's the thing that they really actually wanted to kind of change. Because the rest of it feels so polished. It's like, this could be 1.0. This feels 1.0.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Apparently, this actually is going to go free to play. So, it's wild.
What? So, it's like, early access. Right. So, I mean,
charge people $30-$40 to get in early and see how it's being developed. But then also, do you want to be our guinea pigs while we figure out
the money thing? Yeah.
All the free to play stuff later. Especially like this isn't a tiny studio saying, hey, we're trying to figure this out. Please come figure it out with us. Like,
or like we need the last like leg over to, you know, the last.
No, this is Krafton. They're worth billions of dollars. This is not some mom and pop shop in which you understand why they need maybe to squeeze a little more out of what's going on. They don't know how big the player base is going to be. Like, this is that makes it all the more irritating to adopt a model like that this early in the process. Unless they're closer to 1.0 where it's like this is a soft beta period, right? Like, a lot of times early access
In the early access thing, it says approximately how long will this game be in early access? And they say roughly 1 to 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, a year to 18 months is like what a lot of these games that come out like fairly mature spend about a year, 18 months before they hit 1.0. So, well, that's kind of gross. That's too bad. I mean, hopefully some of this work, but it feels like your recommendation is it looks cool, but maybe don't buy into the ecosystem yet and let it settle down.
Yeah. I mean, you would have to buy, if you want to go check this game out, you have to pay $30. And what that gets you is 10 booster packs. It's just like, so like you open up a bunch and you get a bunch of miniatures and like, they like list out the percentages. You get 3 drops in a booster pack and it's like a common, you get 70% chance at a common, 20% chance at an uncommon. Rare is 6%, Epic is 3%, and Legendary is 1%. So of those 10, you're probably not going to get anything Epic. You're probably not going to get any, and I didn't get anything. I think I got maybe a couple rares, maybe one rare. It's just like, those numbers are like, those are the numbers that you expect out of like pulling random Magic cards. And it's just like, it is a system that exists and like people pay into, but I do not enjoy anymore.
No, that's fair. The reason I stopped. I mean, stuff like that is why I never got into it at all. Like even at a younger age where,
yeah.
you know, whatever my allowance allowed, I think I bought like one thing of Magic cards and went, oh shit. Like I spent my allowance on that and then I don't really even have enough to actually play the game. Right. Okay, I'm going to do something else. So, all right, we'll keep tabs on that as that game moves along. I'll be curious to see. I know Rob has a code as well. I'm curious for him to check it out. If nothing else, I don't know. If we perchance were to have some sort of live event coming up, watching people model, like paint a model.
Yeah. Might not be the we barely even talked that. About that too. And it's like,
I know
that part is good. That part is good.
Yeah. Yeah, we should do a segment on theoretical live show that is.
If one were to
we're
happen.
Not going
to
play the game,
but
would you like to watch us do the paint a model for the next 45 minutes? It's a pretty good idea. I'm gonna mark that one down. Let's take a dip before we get out of here into the question bucket. You can write in with your own questions to gamingadvice.com with the topic questions. This first one comes in from, doesn't have a name, but how much of your furniture is from IKEA? And at what age is IKEA furniture no longer acceptable?
It depends these days, I feel like.
On both or how much you have?
My bed. I think I have a bed from IKEA right now.
The bed frame or the mattress?
Bed frame. No, the mattress. Fuck no, not the mattress. Never the fucking mattress.
Well, I have an IKEA. It's fine.
It's fine.
Okay, let me.
It's not very good.
I was ran much like the chair that we bullied you into.
Yeah.
Given your situation. At some point, it's just, you know, not even tomorrow, but like a mattress is
my mattress is comfortable. I've gotten zero complaints about my mattress. I got complaints about my chair.
Are you taking feedback?
Like yes, feedback I'm taking form? Feedback.
Here, I've got a questionnaire. Much
I'm
like
a young
Steam
woman
Next
about
Fest demo.
Town.
What do you think of the balance here? What do you, how, 1 to 10, how was this mattress?
Wait, all right, listen.
At some point.
Most of my apartment is currently IKEA furniture. And I'll
of course.
That. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But here's the thing. I at one point dated an interior designer who always drilled this into my head. The cool thing about IKEA is that it does make like interior design financially accessible to a lot of people. And
exactly.
So for as much as IKEA shit isn't great, if you take care of it, if you take care of your IKEA furniture, that shit'll last. It'll last okay. Like it will do all right by you.
It'll make one move
properly.
If you're really careful. And otherwise it can last you a solid 5 years.
I think, if it's
something you're using.
Yeah.
I think this also depends on the tier of IKEA stuff. There is definitely like the cheapest,
yes.
like you're getting particle board with formica veneer on it level
yes.
IKEA stuff does exist there for the college
right.
students and whoever else doesn't need things to actually
it's there
stand
for you
up
to throw
to
out when that
yeah.
year is over.
But like there's one tier up. Like I have there's a desk over here. And we've had that desk for like I don't know, probably 5 years. We've moved it. It's been moved.
Mm-hmm.
No, more than 5 years. Jesus, I've been here 8 years now. Jesus Christ. It moved from Baltimore that I can't
see. Kato going through it because he looked at a desk.
Yeah, Kato, the like, fucking...
Kato having a sad moment about the existential movement of time because Kato looked at a desk.
But like that second tier is going to last even longer. Especially like, and it's good stuff. Like that's a bamboo, that's a solid bamboo top.
Yeah, good, and also their stuff has got, I think they have moved... I think it is true that in the last 10 years, especially, they have moved into a space where they recognize that they can get you in the door with that cheap stuff and then also appeal to folks that would like something a little sturdier, like a little more expensive, but doesn't quite go to, you know, like you can pay as much as you want for a piece of furniture. Like people will mm-hmm. sell you whatever zeros you want to add to that. Like these days, like what we do is like a lot of IKEA stuff is what goes in the kids' rooms because... Like, it just gets beat up, their tastes change, like, maybe it goes into a different room, and it just doesn't matter as much. And then IKEA stuff that we've had over the years it's almost like you're doing a test run with it. It's like, well, let's bring this in, see how we feel about it. And then whenever it breaks, it's like, okay, like slowly start changing things in the house. It's right. Like, okay, go spend real money on the thing that is like, this isn't something that even just lasts for 5 years. Like this could last for 15, 20 years if, you know, we stayed in the house that long. And so that's, there is not an age that, you know, I'm approaching 40. There's not an age that IKEA is no longer acceptable. That said, I do think as you get older, recognizing either like the quality of the IKEA stuff you are getting, so you can graduate to like what Kato is talking about, where it'll just last longer. Like it's not, you don't want to be in a place where if you just spent, I don't know, let's say it was something you're spending $200 on, and if you spent $350, it'd be both better and last a lot longer. Like that's the thing that I've had to graduate to as someone that like has the financial means to spend more, but does not have the psychological wherewithal to spend more. And so I just need to like tell myself, no, Patrick, you could get the nicer thing and it would last longer. You've done this for long enough. so yeah. that's where I'm at with it. Mind Palace. Hello, Waypoint staff guests. Obligations require me to spend a week vacation visiting family in Wisconsin soon. While I'll be traveling with a Switch and Steam Deck, as a person in their 40s, I can't comfortably deploy these during the family visits. Also, due to coming in from Canada, my partner's phone will have the data plan, not mine, so that option is out. The only option left is the Mind Palace. What is your favorite game to play in the Mind Palace? It needs to be something just distracting enough that I can survive nodding along to Wisconsin politics and sports, but not so distracting that I lose track of my 3-year-old child. Thanks, Waypoint.
What the fuck?
What? So, whoa. I'm a fan of the Mind Palace.
Yeah, I mean, I think a rephrasing of this is like, what is like something idly you will do with your brain when you're not fully engaged in what's in front of you, but you cannot resort to an electronic distraction for X, Y,
okay.
Or Z reasons?
Also, though, it did feel like resorting to an electronic distraction was ruled out from like a, I'm 40? And I'm like, that's bullshit. You can do that shit whenever you want. You're 40. Yeah. You're allowed to do whatever you want.
Like IKEA.
Yeah.
You can have IKEA. It's fine.
It's fine.
You can make six figures and buy IKEA. Do whatever you want with your life. Like, but I don't know the full context of yes, how that did rub me the wrong way. But who knows? I don't know the social context this is dropping into. This might be the kind of thing where this person is going to get shit from a family member. It's just not worth it. Or it's just like, I just don't want to deal with it. So maybe like not a lack of confidence, but more of a just, it's not worth it. So what else can I do to kind of pass the time? Ren, it seems like this is something you've done before, have thoughts on. What happens in Ren's Mind Palace when we need to pass the time?
My Mind Palace is the game design zone. On my 5-hour drive from Indianapolis back to Ohio for Gen Con, I designed a tabletop role-playing game and play-tested it in my head. And that was a ball for me. That was
your
that
Mind Palace is big. Mine, very small. Not very small.
I designed it. And also, that shit worked. I've done playtests. It's like I designed a competent tabletop role-playing game on that drive. It was very satisfying.
This isn't quite the same thing, but because you mentioned driving, it made me think of it. There is the little spot that my parents own in Wisconsin. There's really just one road that you take if you want the most direct route to get there. In theory, you could take a different road that is also just a road that goes straight there. This takes a little bit longer. But what I like to do is because I take that ride, I've done this drive thousands of times over the course of my life. And I will put the I will put the address into an Apple Maps or Google Maps or Waze. I'm constantly switching the apps because what these apps will do is go, look, you know, generally this will just take you about an hour and 10 minutes to get to. But these apps are desperate to save you like 2 minutes. And so what will happen is I will go on this drive, put in the address, and then occasionally that app will say, take a left here. I'm like, why? Why would I do that? I don't need to. I could just keep going straight. But they want to save me a minute. And I will get taken to wildly different communities, neighborhoods, storefronts, because it takes me just a little bit off the track of what I've done before. And my wife and I get so excited when the maps program says, maybe take a right here. And it's like, whoa, we've never gone that way before. Yo! And like we found like different lunch places and just it's something where otherwise it has deep familiarity to you. I know every twist and every turn. And I'm just looking for a little variation on a drive that I do frequently once a month,
right,
that there and back. And I love the fact that these maps programs just are algorithmically tuned to try and save me some time. I don't think they actually do it, but in some ways, I don't even know how you'd program this, but I wish this could be built into the software itself, in which I could just say, look, I want a little randomness in my life. I just want a little things to be a little different. So, unfortunately, not the case, but it is something I enjoy. All right. Well, like I said, I got a sick kid. And I need to get the fuck out of here. I can hear them calling for me, saying, Jack, put on Jack. All they do is watch Nightmare Before Christmas. And so I'm going to go do that. Do like that movie, though. So that's all right. There are worse things to be subjected to for 100,000 hours. But again, you can write in questions to gamingadvice.com with the questions, with the subject questions. You can also write in, if you write in that same email, you can get us questions about sports. Just put sports in the exclamation mark. Tell us why we should watch rugby, because I think that's what Rob and I are getting into next. This week, we recorded the third episode in our sports podcast, where we talk about Brett Favre being a piece of shit, concussions, the fact that we think we're going to get really into rugby going forward. So look forward to that. That's on Waypoint Plus. That'll be coming to the rest of the Waypoint feed on Saturday. Next week, we've already recorded our episode on the next episode of My Turn. I'm on Escape from New York. That'll be up on Waypoint Plus next week, and then we'll cycle to the main feed a week later. Ren and I will be revisiting Ren's Rentals. I almost said Blockbuster, but we're here in the new branded Ren's Rentals Palace, in which we are going to be playing. What are we going to play, Ren?
We're going to be playing Fatal Frame.
Not Fatal Frame 2, not the sequel that everyone says is the best one. We're going to the OG. We're going to play
the original Fatal Frame.
Fatal Frame.
That's probably what I played at the family video.
Right. Exactly.
I don't remember which one I played.
That's the bit. All right, back off.
Get your ass.
So, and then next week, we're still figuring out what exactly is going on, but stay tuned for more on that soon. But we will have podcasts, we will have streams, and we will have more of us. You can follow everything that Waypoint does on Twitter at Waypoint, on Facebook, YouTube, Waypoint Vice, on Twitch, twitch.tv/Waypoint. Our theme music is Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Learn more at waypoint.zone/Bowen. This podcast is brought to you ad-free. If you're a subscriber at waypointplus.com, you get access to lots of things early, lots of things ad-free. You don't want to hear something from Saudi Arabia, we're working on it, then sign up for Waypoint Plus.
It should be gone. It should be gone by now.
If I just put it into the podcast, then we can apply the pressure we have. It's fine. Sorry. Apologies. We appreciate people flagging things for us. We don't know that stuff that goes into the algorithmic ads before the podcasts go out. But you can follow my work at Patrick Klubeck. Kato, where can people follow you?
At @A_Kato_appears.
And Ren.
At Ren or Raven.
That is us calling time on this podcast. We'll be back next week. Until then, truly, the energy I give this now will make sense when you listen to this, but fuck capitalism. Go home.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's Body Care Breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com code SUMMER.